Off the Ball, GAA.
Like, I remember being on the pod with Paddy in year one, and he was just going, it was great for them to be in Dublin, they could go and they could meet and nobody bothering them, and just having them conversations over lunch. Or
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
It is Off the Ball Breakfast. It is Friday morning. It is the 10th of April and it is 7:30. We've got a stacked show. What a busy weekend of sport we have coming up. And as you'll see on your screen, plenty to discuss between now and around 9:30 or so this morning. We'll discuss the morning's newspaper headlines in a few moments. David Clark, the former Mayo goalkeeper, is going to join us on the line from around 8:15 or so to discuss the start of the Football Championship this weekend, including Mayo in action. Tyrone and Armagh, it is in Armagh, that game is probably the pick of the action this Sunday afternoon. We'll discuss all those games with David Clark and get into the new rules for goalkeepers as well. Well, they're not new anymore. They were in last year, but and get David's views. Hannah O'Connor is going to join us to discuss the start of the Guinness Women's Six Nations campaign this weekend. England versus Ireland. Over 75,000 tickets sold for the action at Twickenham. So it's going to be a cracker tomorrow afternoon in Twickenham. And Susanna Mullen is going to be there for Off the Ball as well. She's going to join us on the line from London. Keith Tracy as well is going to be with us from around 9:15 to discuss all of the talking points from the world of football. The Europa League last night, the League of Ireland tonight, the Premier League is back this weekend, of course, and plenty else to get into. We have Vinnie Perth in with us this morning. Morning, Vinnie.
Good morning.
And we have Dara Smith-Nocton in the corner as well. Morning, Dara.
Hey, lads. Good morning.
It's one of those weekends, you know, the weekends you pinpoint from your sporting calendar every year, and it's one of those that's like, what do we watch and how do we watch it all?
Is the Masters the best weekend of sport in the whole year?
Regardless of whatever, what else is on? There's always football.
I was thinking about the World Cup. I had this discussion yesterday. Like, a World Cup is over a month. So, yep. World Cup, you know, when you get, might get a quarter finals followed by semi finals 3 or 4 days later. But the Masters weekend, if you're into your sport, is just all the little extras around it is great. But the Masters weekend, it's just even if McIlroy was to run away with it, which he won't, most likely, it's still the most compelling.
Yeah, well, that'd be great as well.
Yeah.
If you'd enjoy that. I have a question for you, right? So this came up during the week. Adrian Barry, our own Adrian Barry, came up with it, I think. Yeah, he asked the question of if you were to be thrown into any sporting event in the world, like World Cup final, Masters weekend, whatever it may be.
Oh,
what's yours?
I know Shane's.
You probably do.
So, Ulster Championship finals.
No, as a competitor, as a sports person.
I'm going to say maybe the World Championship finals in snooker.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, really, yeah.
I think so.
Because that first thing, it came to my mind. It's not what it, but it also came to my mind.
To be that good at snooker.
Yeah.
You know, that you're enjoying it that much. Yeah, I think snooker for me,
Why?
Just like, so I'm distinctly average or below average at pool and snooker.
Right.
And to be able to walk around that table knowing you're going to pop most of the balls, you know, and have that confidence. It's just extremely difficult sport.
Yeah.
Golf is probably the same. So I think
snooker's lost the magic of the 80s, the 90s.
It has,
But a World Championship final is still something that you can't let pass.
Yeah. Under the lights of the Crucible.
Yeah.
Having said that, down the back nine at Augusta, and you've got a two-shot lead.
This is the caveat to the question that I probably should have told you is that you can't just be Rory, or you can't just be someone put in the they want to be Muhammad Ali versus George Foreman. No, you don't get to be Muhammad Ali.
Right.
You get to be involved. Say you're in the 2006 World Cup final. You're not Zidane. You're not Pirlo.
I think I know yours.
Do you?
Tour de France.
No, because that'd be absolute hell. It's not enjoyable whatsoever.
Right, yeah.
See,
it'd be great if I could join in the last day after winning it all.
I would say the Masters, right? And I'll tell you why. I think if I had to pick a sport that I was top in golf, it's 50 in the world, but top 10 in the world in, or top 50 in the world. Mm. I think I'd rather, for a lifestyle and longevity, and I think golf, because you can be like top competitor from your 20s to late 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
Where soccer, most team field sports, you're looking at 5, 6, 7, 8 years, yeah, the very, very top.
Mm.
I think I'd like to, NBA Finals would be one for me.
Yep, fair.
As well. Someone said All-Ireland Finals. I'm not convinced, because, see, the thing is as well, celebrations is all part of it. I don't know if a trip to Coppers, that seems like a waste of a wish, of my genie wish, you know?
Yeah. There's a few, yeah, there's a few. We've all imagined being there. We've all had the feeling of what would it be like, but it's just hard to imagine. Like,
I have
imagine.
Scored a goal in a World Cup final in the field in front of my house a few times.
That's fair. Yeah.
Been there and done that.
And I've worn the Argentina jersey when I've done it as well, number 10.
I've commentated on myself as a kid, you know, doing all of these things probably.
Do you know what else I do, actually? Shouldn't tell you this. Do you remember the film The Commitments?
Yeah.
And your man sits in the bath and used to get interviewed by Terry.
Right.
I've done that as well when I was younger.
You're just practicing for this moment, Vinny, you see.
Yeah.
Under the mics. Yeah.
It's all paid off.
It's a tough one. Yeah, I was watching
the
Masters.
Was brilliant, wasn't it?
Class. You can imagine the nerves, I was listening to Rory speaking afterwards, and for anyone who missed it, like a really, really solid opening round for Rory McIlroy, and just the kind of start you want, I suppose, when you're defending champion. And he's just not used to having good starts. Like, even last year, I can't remember what his opening round was, but like,
he hasn't broke 72 in an opening round of Masters.
Incredible.
I don't think ever. What was actually good about yesterday was he wasn't at his very, very best.
Mm.
The round just, a few things went his way at the right moment.
He was chasing a little bit.
And he always feel like there's one 63, 64 in McIlroy in the Masters. So if that's still to come,
yeah,
well then he's the one to beat, obviously, isn't he?
Sam Burns and Rory McIlroy 5 under, share of the lead after the first round. Kitayama, Day and Reed on 3 under. And then you have group of 4 players on 2 under par, including Shane Lowry, who's in a tie for 6th with Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, of course McIlroy beat in the playoff last year, and Scotty Scheffler. Oh, it's dangerous to see Scotty Scheffler in the top 10 this early as well. But, I mean, from an Irish perspective, to have McIlroy tied for 1st and Lowry tied for 6th after the opening round, it's still
Lowry
3 rounds to go.
Had the biggest moment, did he, yesterday in his eagle?
Yeah, the chip in.
Yeah.
It's funny, he was asked about it afterwards and he said, I've been practicing that. Like,
yeah.
You know, so it's not like it's one of these things that was a fluke that he was completely surprised by, but...
Yeah, it didn't look like he overhit it either. It wasn't like one of these that just crashes into the hole.
Yeah.
I was just checking there. You're asking about his open round last year. McIlroy is tied for 27th after the first round last year. So that was the feeling that, you know, there were some people saying he'd missed the cut.
Yeah. After the second round, people were saying it's done.
Yeah.
Which you could see why.
Does this put more pressure on him now?
Oh.
That's the thing, like, is he's top of the leaderboard.
If he hadn't won last year, I think it adds to the pressure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
He still wants to.
He's got Rory to go, like, just back-to-back, waiting for so long to win it and just go back-to-back.
It'd be typical. Well, Nick Faldo was kind of interviewed before the tournament started, and he was saying Rory should go now and do another career Grand Slam, you know, win them all again.
Yeah.
And look, there's every chance that he will, but if he's playing like that, and there was the shoulders back even yesterday, but as you said, there's
what's your thoughts on Faldo? Like, is there a bit of Uncle Albert about him sometimes?
His commentary's all right, but he winds people up, I think.
I know he knows the course so well and he knows how to win a master, so therefore he's entitled more than anybody to give his opinion.
Mm.
It's just you do be a little bit calm.
Some of these sports people, if they were chocolate, they would eat themselves, and Faldo, with all due respect, probably comes under that bracket, but that's probably why he was so good as a sports person.
Well, he gives you a brilliant insight as well. So you're conflicted in your brain listening to him a little bit.
Yeah. I quite like him.
Yeah.
There's something endearing about it, at least for me. I don't mind a bit of bravado.
There's nothing wrong with a little bit of it. But like, I was just looking, so there was one moment in the opening round for McIlroy yesterday. Walks in behind Cameron Young's putt. Rory has an unbelievable putt at one stage, and he could see him just really analysing Cameron Young's putt before him. And like, I think it was reading the stat, 35% of fairways hit. So it's, as you said, Vinny, it's not like he was playing that well in some senses. Like, he was chasing a little bit, even on the first hole, he went into the trees and he trying to get an up and down for par, finds the trees on the par 5, 13th as well. And I think someone on commentary, maybe McGinley, said like some 67, 65s are easier than others, or 67s, I should say. So, yeah, I think he has levels to improve. But even if he goes around,
I think if he sorts his driver out and plays
that's
the way
a great
he did,
sign, yeah.
And there, yeah.
Because, like, he's scrambling really well. Like, that's the hard part.
Mm.
Like,
Bryson DeChambeau with a 4-over.
Yeah.
Oof. That's see, 5-over for him, though, isn't it?
1 point.
Yeah.
He said the par for him in Augusta is, what, 65, so.
Yeah, he comes out with some stuff. But it's so cruel. Matt Fitzpatrick was on the last tap-in bogey and just misses it for double. So he goes from level par to 2-over on the last hole. Like, it just shows how quickly it can kind of unravel for you at the Masters. But anyone on level par, 1-over, is far from out of it. Look, it's only one round.
I presume everybody's got their Masters app back updated for...
Oh, it's ready to go here.
It's ready to go.
Yeah. What an app, by the way.
I went into the fantasy. So Rory McIlroy, Cameron Young... Oldberg, only because of his Adidas Gears class. Had to pick a first timer, Novak, and then Sanborn. So if two in the lead, -4. So
not bad.
It's not bad going, yeah.
Yeah.
So you pick what, 4 or 5?
Five. So you have to, a past winner, it's actually very good the way they do it. Never normally do this stuff, but a past winner, someone from the States, an international player, first timer, and then a wild card, and they were all listed. So.
You'll take that.
Someone I saw Donahue in the comments there, seeing DeChambeau doing the triple bogey was class. I'd be in agreement with that after last year. I know Rory's talked about it since the dispute. I can't remember what hole it was on, but when they both had a putt from 7 or 8 feet out, and it was clear that Rory should have went first. And you know, DeChambeau talking about flipping a tee and all this type of crap to pull him off.
I better say who's where I am in this group, if you don't mind, Shane, because they'll give me a bit of stick. I'm second, right? Which is good, because it says 700,000 people have joined and in the top 10%. But I better mention who's leading the group, because he's been giving me stick for the last day or two. Evan Ferguson has a 6-under at the moment.
He's leading the group.
Wow.
Yeah. And how many's in that particular league?
Oh, it's only a small group of 7 or 8, but...
Is he a golfer?
No, he's not. He pretends he is, but he's brutal.
All footballers pretend they're golfers. Yeah. Some of them are really good.
And he's not allowed to play golf at the moment, he's
fair
brutal.
Enough.
Fair enough.
Can you see his picks? Who did he go for?
Yeah, so Justin Rose, McIlroy, Jacob Bridgman. I wouldn't even know he knows who that is. Scheffler and Bryson DeChambeau. So.
Okay.
Yeah, mixed bag.
Decent.
But I imagine a 6-under, so all the scores get calculated together, so a 6-under, that would be quite high in terms of anybody that's running a 6-under is the head of the field.
You'll take it.
Scheffler's
won't finish there, I'll win it, and Evan be second.
Scheffler's interesting, isn't he? Because the talk coming into this is that his mind is elsewhere, obviously, as the young kid. So 2 weeks ago was born. Shooting well, though.
There's the thing in golf, though, isn't there? Just after you become a dad. Or maybe it's first time dad that you start playing really well.
You're writing them off a little bit.
Like, if you could be anything, like in golf, you could take 2 weeks off, it's grand. In soccer, you can't.
You're not losing. Well, it's a bit of practice, but you're not losing the physique or anything like that.
You're
still
practicing your back garden on them, lads. Yeah. You fly around, you follow the sun all year long.
Yeah.
What a career.
There aren't many sports like that.
No.
Because even in snooker, if you put the cue down for a couple of weeks, you'd be certainly rusty for a bit. Yeah, it's true. Tough life, those golfers.
Oh, it's very tough following the sun.
Yeah.
I go to Dubai for a few months. Then you go the Masters.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Top 50 in the world. Yeah. For 10 years, imagine.
It's funny when you see some of them take the hats off and there's clearly the tan line.
Yeah.
In the sun so often wearing the hats.
You'd have to work on that, wouldn't you?
You would.
It is an incredibly mentally tough sport, though, if you're not playing well.
Mm.
Because there's no real logic as to why you're not playing well. No, everyone's played golf before, and it's just such a frustrating sport when you're not playing well.
And what percentage is psychological?
Oh, what was the percentage Rory gave that time when he was working? Was it 10% at least or something like that? Like, it was, you know, a sizable amount of preparation goes into on the mental side, but...
Mm. Look, lads, we haven't even discussed Shane Lowry and the fact that, like, if Shane Lowry wins the Masters, Rory McIlroy puts the green jacket on him. Like, it was just, that's one of the greatest moments, potential moments in Irish sport. Like, if that was to happen. Oh.
And next year's Masters dinner would be bacon, cabbage.
Yeah.
Guinness.
Angus beef. Yeah. Wagyu.
Yeah, yeah. What's an awfully dish? Is there any awfully
dish?
And
spice bag.
Spice bag, yeah, yeah. Take a spice bag.
It's not an awfully dish, but it probably is.
What's yours? Coddle?
No.
You're talking about coddle. I've never had it. Personally,
like the Friday dinner, chips, beans, eggs, sausages, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Coddle, I've never had either, Dara, but it looks horrendous. With no disrespect to any.
I think I've had posh coddle.
What's posh coddle?
Instead of like watery
water, gunk.
Like it's chicken soup.
Right. Okay. Right.
Same difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Heard it here first.
I was far from posh.
It's a Dublin thing, isn't it? I don't think I've ever heard of it before yesterday, to be honest.
Oh, yesterday?
Yeah, really? It came up during the show and I was like, I don't know what this is like.
Calvin, they don't have internet in Calvin yet, Vinny, you see, so
yeah,
they're just catching up.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Exactly. But hopefully the lads can do the business. If I'm going to tell you after the second round, if Lowry and McIlroy are both still in the top 10, then we can maybe get a little bit excited. Top five, even. Oh, incredible.
Do you know, and going back to the Masters real quick, not that I'm an expert on it, if you said to Rory you could be 5 under now on start of the back nine on Sunday, I'd imagine you pull your hand off and go, yeah, okay, I'll take that and
absolutely.
Go for it.
Absolutely. Just to be in contention. It's just funny, like, it's not that it's shadow boxing, but they always say, like, the Masters starts at the back nine on Sunday.
Yeah, because if you think about, if you look at the leaderboard, there's probably 60% of the field now can't win it, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can't win it in the first round, but you can certainly lose it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah,
but what a weekend of sport!
Oh,
I mean, the Lewis Derby tonight as well, Shane.
The Lewis Derby.
It is.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's there'll be no traffic jams in the way of these two teams or sets of supporters. So
the only attend.
It's probably the biggest game of the season in League of Ireland.
Really? Yeah, you'd say that.
Yeah, it's really important
for this so far this season. When you think of. If Pats are title contenders, to beat Rovers tonight would be huge for them. Doesn't mean they can't win the league if they don't beat Rovers tonight, but if they do, and if Rovers win, I think it's a huge statement win.
Yeah.
It's two defeats in a row for Pats, yeah. So I think it's the biggest game so far this season by a long way.
Who needs it more?
Oh, Pats need it more. Like, if Rovers don't win tonight, still favourites to win the league.
Mm, yeah.
Pats win... If
Pats win, it's a psychological.
Yeah, Pats win. There's a real belief in the dressing room. We're there, thereabouts, and we're in a title race. Whether they want to win or not, separate. So it's a huge game.
I'd love to just see them do well.
It's nice, like tonight. Well. Like, Richmond has been brilliant for a number of years, and whatever they've done there, you'll see Brian Kerr on the Camac, and it's a brilliant place to go and watch football. There's a bit of old schoolness to it, but tonight is the type of night where. You could do with a 10,000 seater stadium down there that would be packed out and full. All the local bars do really well. They've just done the pub upstairs from the ground, what's it called? But they've just done that, reopened that as well. So it adds a little bit of.
Mm.
You need those sort of people in and out of the bars and restaurants locally. So Richmond Park is flying it for the last couple of years.
I guess the only 8 o'clock kickoff tonight in Inchicore, Pat's on. 20 points after 10 games, level on points with Bowes.
McDowell's, very famous pub at Richmond Park.
Rovers then a point behind Pats and Bowes then on 19 points, and Dundalk in fourth on 17 points. Been a brilliant start to the season for them as well. Vinny, home to Derry City tonight as well, 7:45.
Yeah, and do you know what? I often hear people reach out to me at different stages when I'm on here. We get a lot of coaches listening in. If you want to know a good way of coaching, just look at what Kilduff has done. Came up, didn't park the bus. He went and is being brave and he's not overcomplicated. And that sounds like disrespectful. It's not. It's just, they've just gone and expressed them, gone after people, shown all respect. And they got the results from there. In one sense, we all wanted Dundalk just to be safe this year and a year to build.
Mm.
Well, if that's their goal, it'd probably be higher now, but... They're halfway there. They're more than halfway there already.
So. I was going to say, they don't really need to contend for the league.
No.
It'd be fine just to finish mid-table.
Yeah, like, and just come out of headlines
the
a little bit.
Year they've had, yeah.
You know, there'll always be headlines in Dundalk. It's those small towns. People, even like the bigger clubs in League of Ireland are in Dublin, but when you, I've said it a couple of times, when you're involved with Dundalk, the hairdresser knows, the team knows.
Yeah.
The local butcher, the cafes, there's 3 or 4 podcasts, there's 2 or 3 local newspapers. It is that Newcastle of the Premiership where it's a goldfish bowl, but...
Which is great when things are going well, but it's terrible when it's the other way around.
The rumours and everything fly around. That's going back to the weekend of sport.
Mm.
Then you got like Arsenal this Arsenal. Week. All everybody's yeah. watching them. We're probably nearly expecting them to lose or drop points against Bournemouth, aren't we? In terms of
yeah. like Bournemouth, if they've drawn four of the last five or something mental, like I could definitely see. That's a, for me, it's a 1-1 written all over it. And I've been kind of saying that this week. I think Arsenal are on a downward spiral. I know in the Premier League they've been good and they've been fine, but I just see cracks and it's happened at the worst time possible. It's very Arsenal-esque. I can just see them dropping a game or a few points over the next couple of games. I don't think the race is over at all. Personally,
less distractions though. I know the FA. Look, if you get to an FA Cup semi-final, it's hardly a distraction, but. The less games you have at this time of the season, I suppose, the better. Like,
look at United. Like,
says a United fan.
yeah.
Jeez, they play once every month.
Well, United have got Champions League with all the cups. Like, you know, with cup runs, possibly not. Do you know, they don't have the squad for that, but Arsenal possibly have the squad to go on now.
What's important for Arsenal is, interesting to get keys taken later on, is the people that go to Highbury could deal with making a bit of a fortress, and there's such a nervousness when... When you're in around it, or you hear whatever it's watching on telly, all that sense of, oh, I think we're going to make a mess of this, where just they could do it just a little, and the team doesn't play that way as well, which doesn't nearly help. But you'd love a little bit of create a carnival atmosphere around the place. They don't do that either, do they?
No. There's a nervousness around the Emirates at the minute, but you can understand that. Like, what, 31 games played, there's 9 points clear of City. I know City have the game in hand, so City win that game in hand, back to 6. City beat Arsenal, back to 3. Arsenal have a better goal difference, but that goal difference will be cut. It's not over yet, lads.
I don't think it is. No,
Arsenal rightly heavy favourites at the moment still, but
it's firmly in their hands, but I see those hands shaking slightly.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. That Arsenal-Bournemouth game is the early kickoff in the Premier League, 12:30 tomorrow as well. So, I don't know what impact that has. But
I think we were talking before the show started, like, City still have to go out and beat Chelsea. As well, like, that's certainly not a given.
City have to be flawless between now and the end of the season. That, there's not enough confidence in that, I don't think.
No.
Yeah, well, they have to play them on the 19th of April. That's a huge game, Arsenal-City. That's a massive game, depending on what happens this weekend. But even on the relegation side of things... Oh, Spurs.
We have live commentary of Sunderland Spurs on Sunday afternoon before the Chelsea City comes. And
huge game.
I don't know. Maybe like.
Who goes down, Shane?
If you'd asked me a few weeks ago, I was kind of leaning towards Forest for no real reason, only then maybe a Europa League run might distract them. But Spurs just look so, so bad. Like, De Zerbi is a really, really good manager, but. And I know he signed a 5-year deal and all, but if they get relegated, there's no chance he's staying on. You would have thought, like,
yeah.
But I don't know if Sunderland are very, very tough to beat at the Stadium of Light, and they will know that if they can get a win in this one, they don't have much to play for. Sunderland necessarily. Well, they're 43 points. They could get a European spot if they pushed on and still won a few games. But
between Leeds, Forest, Spurs,
West Ham,
you feel like not everyone can win. So X amount of games, but you feel if you're any of them teams, you need minimum 3 wins now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you, to be secure.
Spurs are probably the toughest team to see getting 3 wins at the moment, for me.
Based on form, for sure, yeah.
Like,
totally.
Now, 3 wins takes Leeds to what? 41 points?
Yeah.
So that's definite, but...
42, actually, yeah.
Oh, 42, but 2 wins for Leeds...
They could take 39. Yeah.
Like it's still, you mightn't be enough this year.
No.
Yeah. We talked about De Zerbi's kind of his record when he comes into clubs, like in the first 5 or 6 games. Mm. It's not historically great either. It is such a strange appointment for this point in the season. Like, but yeah, and that Forest game was a big game. That was like, you need to win that game or at least take something from it. And they lost 3-0 at home. So I don't trust them in these high stake games whatsoever. I think they will go down.
The advantage for De Zerbi, though, he's had that international window came at the right time from just to allow him settle into the club.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Probably a few players away and different things, but still.
They just need to follow Archie Gray. He's been the only man performing for Spurs in the last couple of months, really, but that is a huge game on Sunday afternoon. It's kind of one of those, not hate watches, but curious watches. Everyone's watching Spurs now. You have no interest. It's like
watching for the wrong reasons. Yeah,
exactly.
You don't want to have football. You're certainly watching North London, aren't you? Do Arsenal fall over the line, or do Spurs
fall
over the line?
Spurs versus Lincoln in the Championship next year in the billion pound stadium.
Jack Moylan.
Oh yeah, what a moment!
Yeah,
unbelievable. So there's plenty of football, lads. We'll obviously discuss more football later on with Keith Tracy as well. By the way, the tea times for anyone just curious. For the Masters second round today, from an Irish perspective, Shane Lowry starts the second round, kind of in later pairs. Lowry is at 5:56 p.m. Irish time this evening, with McIlroy in the penultimate group from 6:44 p.m. So we're on quarter to sevens or so this evening. Rory McIlroy will play with Cameron Young and the amateur Mason Howell. Lowry is with Jason Day, who was very impressive as well yesterday, and Dustin Johnson. While Tom McKibben, he's battling to make the cut. He's among the very early starters. He's off at 10-1 this afternoon alongside Andrew Novak and Brian Campbell, the American duo. So that's the tea times for the Irish. The entry Grand National is another thing. Like, there's
too much.
It's a hectic weekend.
Too much. You're going to miss stuff, like.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know the way you get magical Irish weekends? We win the Masters, someone from Ireland.
Yep.
Ireland beat England in the rugby.
Yeah. Ooh. Irish winner of the National.
Irish winner of the National. And London can't beat Mayo, can they? That'll just go against.
Yeah, we need Mayo to beat London.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Could be a magic weekend for Irish sport, we look back on.
We could do a good boxing just Saturday night, couldn't we? Just to, like, the Bernard Dunn night, one of them, just to finish it off.
Yeah.
Something slightly extra.
Even our Matt Tyrone, I'm looking forward to that game.
Yeah.
Regardless kind of what happens, there's such an interesting storyline going into it about, you know, Tyrone's lack of support coming into this one. Also, our Matt, I'm not convinced by them this season. I don't think anyone is totally. Mm. But they don't feel like they're too far off anyone either.
Yeah, they were struggling in Division 1. Tyrone were struggling in Division 2. So there is there's a difference there, albeit Division 2 is nasty enough to get out of. That's an interesting game. Maybe, look, Tyrone are under the radar a little bit, away from home.
Yeah, well, this, the pressure's off.
No expectation.
They need to win back to fans, though. And this is a good way to do it. You go out and beat Armagh in the Ulster Championship. Perfect opportunity to do so, but...
Is Armagh's problem... The new rules. They still haven't adopted.
The problem seems to be just scoring. Like, they're good all over the pitch on paper. It's a great team. Obviously, great manager, McGeaney. Like, but it just...
Sort of scoring goals.
But I touched on this when the rules first came out. I felt that it's the same in football, soccer, we call it for this part. But the best coaches, it's easy to coach defensive football.
Mm.
It's the hardest part is to go and exploit somebody, whether that's in soccer, whether that's in Gab, blanket defences. And you've got to come up with that imagination and the different ways of doing it. So that'll be an interesting test for McGeaney. Does he, like, obviously everybody is struggling with the kick out.
Yeah.
We get that, or not everybody, but it's such a part of it. Yeah. But then it's 11v11 once you're on the attack.
Mm.
So you think about some of the scores. So say it was you wouldn't be shocked to see a 18-17 scoreline in a match. 35 scores over 60 minutes. It's basically a score technically every 2 minutes, allowing for the odd two-pointer. So ball in hands is huge, but it's 11v11 once you cross the halfway line, attack v defence.
Yeah.
And it's about the imagination of a coach to come up with different ways of creating. One thing I started to notice watching bits of the league recently is the amount of goal scoring chances has dried up a little bit.
Yeah.
Whether that's teams have copped onto something or feel there's more benefit in taking a two-pointer than goals, because it's the risk and reward thing. It's interesting.
And I thought with the two-pointer, a little bit more space would open up for full forwards almost, but it materialises in some games, but then teams, as you say, they have so many big kickers now that they're just like, look, we'll take the 2 points here. Mm. You get the ball into the hands of your kickers and there's a higher percentage chance you're going to score those 2-pointers. You won't always, but the wind as well has a factor in a lot of these early games, true. You know. But
I enjoyed the build-up though as well. Like, think about Conor O'Donnell's goal against Kerry. The kind of slow build-up, kind of basketball-style screens. I know, technically illegal, but for now they seem to be allowed. I enjoy that kind of tactical build-up, and you can see it in real time. You're like, that's a great play, it's very smart. But then also, when games do open and, you know, people are turning the ball over on one side and going up the other, like, games can open up. I think Armagh Tyrone is one of those games that has the potential to do that. I think Armagh have just been criticised a bit for choosing not to go for goal and taking the fisted points, and that's jarring to watch at times, but I think when it comes to Ulster Championship though, it tends to turns up a notch, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it
does. One of the things I've also noticed quickly is that with a soccer coach head on, is I could be wrong in this, but I think it was Derry against Kildare. Do you remember that goal? It got shared social media widely, where it's running at somebody and taking a man on 1v1 will lead to something because of the 11v11 element. I think it was Derry scored, midfielder picked up a halfway line, and just Renna is defender.
Yep.
Once you get past him, it all opens up for you. There's a lot more space now for that, and you're not seeing enough people taking each other on 1v1 enough in terms of so me against you. Once you get past you, then because it keep 11v11, that's such an advantage for attacker that that's something I wonder why I'm not seeing more of that when you watch the game. Maybe it will happen in the championship, or maybe coaches just want people to be a bit more pragmatic.
Yeah, it's like teething problems almost. Coaches are still trying to get used to it. I know there were a year in now at this stage, but might only see the real advancements in a year or two to these rules. One man who was very good, a very good footballer, Brian Fenton, see on the back pages as well. Any lingering hopes of him returning to Ger Brennan's Dublin squad ended yesterday. He was announced as a pundit in the Sunday game for the summer.
You never know. Michael Murphy came back.
That's true. He was a pundit.
Happens sometimes.
Just a 7-time All-Ireland winner, Brian Fenton.
Yeah.
Still playing for his club, Raheny.
They could do with him.
They could.
They could certainly do with him.
One of the most decorated players in the history of the game. So those 7 All-Irelands, 6 All-Stars, 4 National Leagues, 10 Leinster titles, and named Footballer of the Year twice in 2018 and 2020. Not bad.
You'd miss a player like that even though he was playing for Dublin, you know?
Yeah.
I hated watching Dublin for obvious reasons, but what a player he was.
Class. And Kevin,
I just
Monaghan
done
my
homework
weekend.
There, Shane. Sorry, yeah. You threw something out there. Paul Cassidy's goal for Derry against...
That was it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where he runs past people.
Yeah. You need those players as well who just aren't afraid to turn on the afterburners and go.
You wonder if coaches in certain counties are allowing players to do that.
Yeah.
Because the risk and reward...
Yeah.
But I think if you do it, it's huge.
Yeah, 100%. The Lee Keegan types.
Teams are so smart in defence. It just, you have to be a special type of player to do that on a consistent basis, to be able to take someone on and make something of it. Like, plenty of players can get past first man, but then it's getting trapped and getting sucked into the defence.
And that's why I think McGuinness's background in soccer may help him. You know, Creighton, 11v11. So if you imagine, say, watching YouTube, Pep Guardiola doing a training session, he's talking about going short, long down one side, go out the other side, and create, you said basketball, but it's that same sort of vision where you're looking to create an overload of 3v2 in a different area. And when a team shift over and get set defensively, it's how quick you can get it from one side of the pitch to the other to create that chance, whether it's a goal scoring chance or a simple score. So that's where you wonder when McGuinness's head might be. It didn't happen last year, they got to the final obviously, but this year, the more he understands the rule and the 11v11 element of soccer, he's went all the way in a coaching background in terms of his badges and stuff like that in soccer. I think it'd be fascinating. I think he may have better insight in developing those things over some of the other coaches.
If I was a modern day manager, which I'm obviously not, but if I was, I think I would study like Phil Jackson, like Doc Rivers, Steve Kerr, like old players, and really focusing on that. You talk about like a 3v2 overload. Like, you do see that where players or teams would overload maybe 9 or 10 lads on one side, try and isolate their best shooter, get them the ball. There's so much in that. Because the way it is now where it's cut in half, you basically have half a court or half a pitch. It's just a set play and it's just like basketball. You know, talk about the screens, you talk about the 3-point shot, the beyond the arc shot. Like, it's so similar. And I know some teams are implementing it, but there's so many parallels to be drawn from it. You're kind of just waiting for one team to really, really commit to it.
Yeah.
I don't know who does it. Maybe it's a team that's, Division 2 team that's not playing so well at the minute, or like a Meath or something who have good shooters but can drop form every now and then, or Kildare. I don't know. Like, I think there's so much in it though.
Or even a Mayo under Andy Moran as well. Yeah, there's a few
totally.
Of those teams
Andy
it.
Has a soccer background.
Yeah, can help.
He walked into the Longford Town dressing room, I'm going to say around 2000, I was in that dressing room.
Right.
And it was back in the day where you had to wear, you know, you short and tie for a game. And Andy turned up and looked like he's just made his confirmation.
Probably had.
It was in the '80s where you give people real stick, air stick in Longford around that time. You were part of the gang if you were getting a bit of stick.
Initiation.
But I gave him an awful day that day. I think it was his first time ever in the senior dressing room. He didn't stick at it actually, so I feel a bit guilty.
Yeah.
I must reach out to him one day and
football's
apologize.
Loss was Gaelic football's gain.
Yes.
Yeah, there's loads and all that. We'll obviously talk Cavan Monaghan next week, Darragh. We'll be friends this week, and we can discuss that game next week. Andy Robertson announcing he's leaving Liverpool as well at the end of this season. 9 trophy-laden years, 32 years of age. So 373 appearances, 2 Premier League titles, Champions League, FA Cup, 2 League Cups, FIFA Club World Cup, UEFA Super Cup, Community Shield. If you told him when he was joining Liverpool that he'd have all these trophies by the end, he'd have ripped your arm off for them. Incredible career, and probably the right time to go out.
Feels like a good time,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it feels like he was put out to pasture a little bit too early. I think he should have had more involvement this year. Carrick has playing, particularly early on the season. Remember Ireland played against Hungary. Carrick's away was awful.
Yeah.
He was going through that spell where it didn't look good. Robinson still didn't get into the team, and I felt he should have more. But go back to him. What a sort of outstanding player. He was Klopp's dream, wasn't he, in terms of his running power.
15 starts just this season.
Yeah, it's not enough. But what he done over his career, like that running power from fullback, just constant running.
Yeah.
I call it punching holes in defence, because Mane would have the ball and he would just go. Mane could go inside, Trent could cross, and all of a sudden Robinson be at the back post. And defensively, he was always sound enough as well. So
yeah, big game player as well. Felt like he always played well against City.
Yeah,
in Champions League was always prominent. Top player. As well for country as well. When he played, I know he's not retired from international duty or anything like that yet. But he's some servant. Like, and he was perfect for that Klopp team.
Yeah,
maybe didn't fit into Slot's system as well. You know, probably lost a yard or two of pace over last season or so. But yeah, jeez, what a servant for that Klopp team.
I just think it's crucial. The Slot way has probably curtailed. I still think he had another 12 months in him, but he had to play, as you said, a certain way. Yeah. Slot looks for a little bit more possession, and I don't think, actually, ironically, passing or quality of passing would be his sort of strongest point. But plus, he's Scottish as well, and you know you watch those little videos around the dressing room and all, sometimes just one fella is the glue. You always got the impression really close to Salah, but also was then with the younger players coming through, and it comes across really good fella, funny guy as well. So when you're making great teams, I'd imagine people like that are the glue that keeps it together. Whether it was Mane and Salah is a great example where you could always sense there was tension. You imagine he crossed the border with people like that, and he played a huge role in the success of Liverpool, hasn't he?
Yeah, be interesting to see where he ends up. I know he had a youth career with Celtic, never made a first team appearance for Celtic. He left when he was still very young, went to Queen's Park, but you could see him going back to Parkhead maybe. I don't know, does he go for a big money move elsewhere? He seems like a home bird. I can't see him heading off to the Middle East. I can't really see it. You never know these players, but
yeah,
you know, big payday before you retire, etc. But
Noel Callan's saying he's Liverpool's best left back ever.
That's a big shout, is it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was thinking there before I read it out. Is there anyone I'm forgetting? I would tend to agree with it.
Oh, I don't know.
Top 10 left backs of all time. Here's a unofficial This Is Anfield ranking. You have in the top, Ronnie Moore in 6th, Alec Lindsay 5th, John Arnorisa 4th, Jerry Byrne 3rd, Andy Robertson 2nd, and Alan Kennedy.
Kennedy scored a winner in the European Cup final.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like I watched a whole lot of his career, but
82 or 78. Was it one of them? 82 sticks in my mind, I could be wrong. But Alan Kennedy, like, we think modern fullbacks have only been invented now, but Liverpool used to win the European Cup at the time, and their fullbacks, whether it was Phil Neal, Alan Kennedy, could score the odd goal.
Yeah.
I'm always reluctant to talk too much about, you know, where people rank when they retire, when they leave a club, because it's like you end up putting them second or third and you're like, oh yeah, man, yeah. And it leaves you slightly less positive leaving the conversation.
But, yeah. Emlyn Hughes, someone mentions Emlyn Hughes here, if you put him down as a left back, yeah. He's the first Liverpool captain to lift the European Cup, so hard to compete with that as well. But certainly in modern times, he's probably a nudge ahead of John Arnarisa in the last, what, 15, 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Incredible career.
I think so. And that's the thing even about Salah, isn't it? Like, where it's funny, like, is Salah leaving as a legend because there's still a bit of a cloud over the last... Should Salah just have went at the end of last season?
Yeah,
for
probably.
His own legacy. Yeah. And we didn't know what was going to happen. It's easy to say in hindsight, but still.
Steve Staunton says, someone in the comments, was he dominant left-back for Liverpool, I suppose he played there. Someone says, had a discussion in the WhatsApp group yesterday, and Kennedy, Reece and Robbo were the three in the conversation.
Yeah.
Robbo, some amount of assists in that club squad.
Yeah. Tim and Trent, what they offered with crossing and getting forward, like, it was just absolutely crucial to everything they did.
Yeah.
100%. Who played left back for Liverpool in that great 88-89 team? I'm going to guess someone like Gillespie. That was probably Liverpool's best ever team that time.
Yeah.
You could debate that and a couple other teams, but...
Transfermarkt has the list of defenders from that era. They actually have three left backs down: Steve Staunton, David Burrows, and Jim Beglin. Actually,
Jim Beglin. Yeah, they weren't shy on left backs.
No,
they've had a few decent ones over the years. In fairness, hard to argue. Man on the back page as well, Harry Maguire, who's just signed a contract extension with Manchester United. Of course, the team over in Kildare this week. It was Carton House, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
Yes.
Yeah. I always like seeing those, you know, videos of the little kids who've clearly lined up for hours with their parents getting the autographs. And when I remember as a kid standing outside the old Lansdowne Road after every single Republic of Ireland home match, and like we'd always park at cousin's house in Colester and drive back to Monaghan from Colester. But before we get the dart, I had to get an autograph over of every single player that would come out, and just match programmes at the house filled with signatures from that great, like, 01 team, 02 team. But just, you can just imagine for kids like that, and you see it as well when Liverpool come over and you know, even Leeds as well and stuff, kids just absolutely lapping it up, and you don't forget that. There was a lovely moment yesterday, and Rory McIlroy just literally pointed at a kid. Kid was wearing a Galway jersey. I think he was from New Jersey. His dad was from Galway. He was from New Jersey, and the kid was absolutely buzzing. It's amazing what just a little moment like that can do for for a kid. Yeah, I remember getting an autograph off Trevor Vaughan when he played for Man United. I was a kid, and I was cloud fair. Nine.
I get an autograph off Trevor.
Yeah,
even though I played with him.
Yeah, you weren't a man for autographs, no.
No, no. Do you know what? Like, I've literally no memorabilia at all in my house from anything.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Really?
Not a single thing. Remember, you know the famous? I think I spoke with this before. The famous Richard Dunn jersey from.
Oh yeah, Russia. Marshall. Yeah.
So I text him. Literally after the game, I want that jersey.
Yeah,
not thinking it was, and then all of a sudden the FAI got a hold of it, and it's ended up. And there's a guy mining at the moment. The boys' jerseys does a really good job with it, but yeah, I've never kept any memorabilia whatsoever.
Yeah, some people aren't just hoarders. In fairness,
yeah, I think I've one jersey. I had a jersey. I was lucky enough that my auntie used to. She was involved with the FAI for a period of time, and she used to get us in. Do you know, there's an area between the two. There's two lounges in the Aviva, or I don't know if there still is, but there was back then. Players' lounge and a kind of a general lounge. And the players used to walk in between the two of them.
Yeah.
So we were kind of set up camp there. I think I got the entire match day squad on one jersey that day. Can't remember the game though. But like that was a time, maybe like 2014, maybe, thereabouts. So it's Shane Long. I distinctly remember getting David Ford's. I think he was just really nice. But apart from that, yeah, I wouldn't be, no, wouldn't have a lot myself now. You'd have programs, but kind of just end up getting lost, don't I?
You don't forget those moments as a kid.
No.
Yeah, I remember, Trevor Vaughan, it was a go to Keegan, and he was playing for Man United, and he was this one, he had the like sandy hair, and he was banging in goals, I think, for Man United that season. I don't even know how long he was there. Maybe it was.
Do you know
when
you mentioned Gordon Keegan? I can picture the hill behind the goal with the two cows on it.
Cows, yeah. Well, the cows are still there. I was there the other day. Yeah. But
we need Monaghan back in the league.
It'd be great.
But here, go back to Harry Maguire. you only feel like now Luke Shaw has a good end to the season, he gets a new contract as well, and then in the middle of next season they're gone, United need to replace these guys. If you ever want a new contract, it doesn't matter about your first 4 years, just finish your last year well and then you just sign a new three or four year deal.
It's like Casemiro, he had the kind of period in between, but now he's been brilliant for the last 6 months and everyone's like, please sign on again. But
clearly an impact of the lesser games as well.
Yeah,
it's so obvious. Like when we do have more football next season, it's so obvious that he would have had a drop in form if he was staying on.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, has an impact. Should mention there's Europa League and Europa Conference League action last night. I mean, yeah, we haven't even mentioned it.
So much.
Bologna 1, Aston Villa 3 in the Europa League quarterfinal, first leg over in Italy. Konsa with the opener on just before half time for Villa. Ollie Watkins with another goal on 51 minutes. They're in dreamland at that point. Then Jonathan Rowe scores a goal in the 90th minute to make it 2-1 and bring one back for Bologna. He was brilliant, by the way, 22 years of age. Played for Norwich, went on loan to Marseille, then signed for them permanently before joining Bologna last year. He looked really, really good yesterday. Scored the goal and you're thinking,
it's a great goal.
It was a brilliant goal. And he was trying that all night, but Martinez had some unbelievable saves. And then 94th minute, Watkins scores again and makes a 3-1 Villa, and Villa would be absolutely delighted with that result.
Some touch as well from the corner. It was a really strange goal.
Yeah, it was like really unmarked goal somehow.
Yeah,
but
did very well.
Worked out in his favour. Watkins is a man who's been bereft of confidence a little bit, but
yeah. And sometimes, you know, you think Europa League is a pain in the neck, but it's moments like that could help them finish the season well and ultimately end up in the Champions League spots for Villa. You know, be interesting. Could you see Palace win the conference and Villa win the Europa League? As much as the English clubs nearly, unless they're in the Champions League, don't want to be there sometimes.
Well, they're probably favourites, the two you've just named. Well, Palace up with one foot in the semi-finals of the Conference League now after the 3-0 win over Fiorentina last night.
Yeah.
And Villa, half a foot or three quarters of a foot into the semi-finals.
Italian football is... what a, like,
it's a basket case, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'd love to dig into that. We probably should do a piece at some point. It's really interesting because it's not like some of the clubs aren't playing that well, but it doesn't feel like the clubs are that bad. Like Inter are in the Champions League final.
Yeah,
season's going, like,
it's strange, isn't it?
It's a very, very odd situation.
They just fluctuate heavily. It's mad. And Nottingham Forest as well. Good draw for them away to Porto, 1-1. Gomez opening the scoring for Porto on 11 minutes, and Porto were so dominant in the early stages of that one. And then an absolute freak own goal. I don't know if you saw this own goal, lads. The Forest equaliser from Martin Fernandez, the poor right back, it was for Porto, when he just 2 minutes after taking the lead smacks the ball back to his keeper with too much pace on it. It's one of those from the camera hadn't even panned in on him because it was like, there was no danger. You don't see it happen too often, but...
No, I felt so bad for him. And then it finishes 1-1 as well. Like, that's it's a much different second leg, obviously, now that it's a draw.
Yes.
Jesus. Like, I just hope they don't drop him or something.
I know.
The next game, like, it's just one of those things. I thought the keeper maybe could have done a little bit better.
Yeah, possibly.
Kind of went for it with his hand. I was like, he should maybe just slide in there.
He was actually, he was taken off, wasn't he?
He was, I think he pulled up injured or something.
Pulled up injured 19 minutes later. Probably for his own good at the end of the day. But yeah, finished Porto 1, Nottingham Forest 1, Freiburg 3, Celta Vigo 0, and Bologna 1, Aston Villa 3 in the Europa League. Quarterfinals, first legs, and in the Conference League, as we said, Palace 3-0 winners over Fiorentina. David De Gea in goals for Fiorentina in that one. Shakhtar Donetsk beating Troy Parrott's AZ Alkmaar 3-0, unfortunately, last night in the first leg, and Mainz beating Strasbourg 2-0, while Rayo Vallecano beat AEK Athens 3-0 in the first leg of their Conference League. So a lot of one-sided games in the Conference League. First rounds, big wins for the home teams in all four of those games, in fact. We'll get back to the football, of course, with Keith Tracy later on, lads. But for now, I should mention, Off the Ball Breakfast is with Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. We're going to chat to former Mayo keeper David Clark next.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.